Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. Jazza, is there anything funny about Tom Tugendhat's name?
I don't think so. It's clearly got a depth of culture and heritage, I think it would be really inappropriate for somebody to think that that's a funny name.
Yeah, I would say so. It's got a lot of consonants in it.
Tugendhat.
Some of which you pronounce. I'm not actually fully sure how you say his name. I think it's Tugendhat.
Tug end hat?
I'm asking this, dear Lester, because in the discussions preparing for this podcast, Jazza said that the name was a bit silly, which is incredibly rich from somebody whose first name is Jazza.
I had no power over that, to be fair. Yeah. To be fair, I don't think Tom Tugendhat had any power over his surname either. So we're in look at us in the same boat.
Yeah.
But my name does not have cultural...
does not have culture, full stop.
No, yeah, mine was made up. His representative of his heritage. Yes, I am a bigot. I've been outed finally, 199 episodes in. It was me all along, listener.
It's not the result people expected, I think.
No, twist. We've been building up to this point over many, many episodes.
It's a Czech name, isn't it, originally? I think you said that to me. I don't.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's Czech. I think it's a Czech Jewish name.
It's one of those names that
please edit this out.
It does. It looks like an English name, actually.
Tug End Hat.
Yeah, it could be an English name.
Welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, everybody. My name is Jazza, and this is Jimmy, and we meet whenever we bloody want, frankly. We don't adhere to schedules to talk about politics, social issues, and current events.
We do.
Jimmy. Apart from Tom Tugendhat's name, what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, you know, around Tom Tugendhat's name, we are going to be discussing the fact that he has been the first Tory MP to announce that he would be interested in becoming Prime Minister after Boris Johnson vacates the job.
It's quite refreshing because people get asked all the time, do you want to be leader? Do you want to be Prime Minister? And very often people just skirt the question. And I'm like, you're a bloody politician. You want to be Prime Minister? Like, why? Like, don't be coy.
Well, the rule of thumb is that if somebody's in cabinet, they want to be Prime Minister or thinks they should be Prime Minister. I don't think Tom Tugendhat is. He's chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, but I don't think he's been in a cabinet position under Boris Johnson, unlike some of the other people that we're going to be talking about. So obviously, I imagine most of the people listening to this will have been following the toings and froings of Boris Johnson's leadership, the various parties.
I swear to God, if our luck is anything to go by, Sue Gray's report is going to go out before we put this episode out. Like, definitely. Like, we, like every other political focus podcast in the UK over the past 2 weeks, have just been like, should we just wait to record until Sue Gray's report is out? So we've basically been doing that since Wednesday, just kicking the can down the road, and we were like, you know what, let's just do it.
For what it's worth,
insert Sue Gray report conclusion here.
I don't think she's going to conclude very much that we don't already know.
It's all going to be redacted, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, we think that Boris Johnson is probably not going to be the leader for very much longer, I think. Is that our stance?
No,
who are kind of like jostling.
I think I would actually still be more confident that he's going to lead the Tories into the next general election than not, as it goes. I think that, you know, there's a significant chance that he will be ousted, but I think he's survived this round, actually. Which is very much hostage to fortune. But, you know, knowing my luck, there'll be a vote of no confidence tomorrow. And it will be all over and done with.
I cannot wait. Or he'll just be really embarrassed about the cake and then resign. Imagine.
Oh, well, he suddenly finds a sense of shame. It doesn't seem that likely.
It's been under a John Lewis rug that Theresa May left behind.
Yeah, but yeah, rather than fixate on the specifics of when Boris Johnson will leave, we'll be discussing who might replace him as our first topic.
Yeah, wonderful. Slightly different than your run-of-the-mill UK politics podcast.
Yeah,
look
exactly.
At us changing the mold.
Second up, we are going to be discussing something lighter. We're going to be talking about Ukraine and the fact that Russia is poised to invade it at any point. So I read somewhere actually that there's an exercise planned between Russia and Belarus on the 10th and the 20th of February, which somebody from Unheard thinks is the likely date of an invasion. But
what days?
The 10th and the 20th is when this military exercise is due to take place.
So so over Valentine's Day. Well, that's rude, isn't it?
It's romantic, you know.
Ah, yeah, a returning of Ukraine to the motherland. Oh, no, it's not funny. I have really enjoyed like Ukrainian discourse about this. Like, there's lots of memes. It's meme heavy because when your country is facing existential dread and a lack of future, an invasion. What else can you do but meme? And practice with the anti-tank weapons that the UK has given you.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, in another universe, Jazza, me and you would be recording this in a flat in Kiev, potentially, and bantering about how our country was about to be invaded by the Russians.
Well, I'm just waiting for France to do the same.
Invade the UK.
Yeah, it's only a matter of strategy. Time. Yeah. And then finally... is this our light story for the segment? I don't know. So Neil Young, who is I'm told is a very famous and respected musician.
Do you not know who Neil Young is?
I'd heard the name before.
Okay, I think that's
I can tell you right now, I don't know a single Neil Young song.
Okay, we can talk about that. Okay. Before we get into the main,
Think I'm the demographic. Has he represented anybody at Eurovision? No, therefore I'm not the demographic.
He's Canadian, so it would be quite a controversial decision, I think, for him to represent, you know, anyone else, or for Canada to enter Eurovision, I would say.
Well, Celine Dion famously represented and won for Switzerland, so shows how much you know.
I don't think Neil Young has any Swiss connections. I could be wrong about that. I've not looked into it that deeply.
We're not going to go into open this box of Eurovision rules that for some reason is planted permanently in my brain. Neil Young, because of the fact that Joe Rogan is continuing to have an exclusivity project worth $100 million a year with Spotify, has decided, he basically gave Spotify an ultimatum: keep Neil Young or keep Joe Rogan. Spotify chose Joe Rogan, despite the fact that it is well documented that he's got quite a few anti-vax and conspiracy theorist people who just like, look at the facts, man. That vibe, like, that's the whole podcast really, but like 3 hours long. Don't listen, it's not worth it.
I wouldn't say that's the whole podcast, to be fair to him. It's select episodes.
Did listen to the Miley Cyrus one.
How was it?
I think she's cool.
No thoughts on Rogan then?
So Robert Malone, Dr. Robert Malone, who is one of the people who contributed to the creation of the mRNA vaccines. Right. So that's Pfizer, Moderna. Are there any others? I don't know. He's basically going a bit... So Rebecca Watson, who I watch on YouTube... basically spelled out his evil supervillain origin story, and it's basically this: because he thinks he should get more attention for being a pivotal person in the many steps that go to creating the mRNA vaccine, and now he's so butthurt that he isn't the center of attention for saving half the world, that now he's going around on Joe Rogan and saying, well, you know what, vaccines can make things worse.
Right, okay. This was a thread of the story that I wasn't really aware of.
Oh my god, I can't wait to tell you more. It's going to be so fun. Essentially, there are some really high profile people now pulling all of their stuff from Spotify, like yeah,
Joni Mitchell. She's quite famous among a certain demographic. I can't believe you don't really know who Joni Mitchell is. But the Neil Young thing is also bad.
Uh-huh. I'm not sorry. They didn't come to me.
We're going to be talking about Jazz's lack of pop culture knowledge, and also whether Joe Rogan should be hosted on Spotify. But before that, and before Jazza takes us on any more diversions about Robert Malone or anyone else, I think we should talk a little bit about the Patreon accounts, play some music, and then we can get back to the Tory leadership contest.
Robert who?
Did you not say Robert Malone? Jazz is fucking with me, so let's move on.
Yeah.
If you've been enjoying listening to the Right Dishonorable podcast and want to get a little bit extra from us, you can go to patreon.com/rightdishonorable and access a host of bonus episodes, which are released after every full episode is put out. In recent weeks, we've discussed the New Zealand smoking ban, proportional representation, a favourite of ours, and Facebook's Metaverse project. So if you want to listen to the back catalogue of bonus content, go to patreon.com/rightdishonorable and you'll see all the sign-up details there. Thank you very much to our existing patrons, Alexander Wood, Andrew Kilpatrick, David Preston, Gemma Cumming, Gia Carney, John O, Marlene, Matt, Michael Costa, Nick Webb, and Seb Kales.
Who is Tom Tugendhat?
Tom Tugendhat is the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee. So he's a big man in terms of select committees.
How very exciting. People like him because he's an ex-soldier, right?
That's one of his main
served
draws,
He served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah,
he's basically correct. Another timeline for Nick Matzy.
That is a very niche joke. But yes,
he's been a guest on this podcast. People can go back and find Nick Matzy.
He has, yeah. Former Change UK candidate Nick Matzy, who has been on the podcast several times.
Yeah. So this is being you shared this with me, and this is kind of being presented by some news outlets, Guardian, as throwing his hat into the leadership ring. I don't really think that's what he's done. He basically was asked, do you want to be prime minister? And he said, yeah, I'd do it. I'd serve at the highest level that people want me to.
This was on Times Radio, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't feel like that's saying, it was a bit clickbaity, because it was almost it was framed as if he had launched a leadership bid, and he didn't. He basically said, yeah, I'd run. And I think we're putting too much weight on it, right? And somebody described him as inevitably being the Rory Stewart candidate.
Right.
Who famously is very popular with media, but no one knows him or knows who he is or likes him.
To be fair, it is true of most MPs that nobody knows them or likes them. So
sure. And yet somehow persist in their jobs that are based on being known and being liked.
Well, the average person will know who Boris Johnson is. Will not be able to name who the Chancellor is, will not be able to name who the Foreign Secretary is, and so on, all the way down the list, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like the
Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss, you're welcome.
They might recognise the name, possibly, but I think a lot of people would struggle to explain what any of these people do. So I'm not sure that's the damning indictment of Tom Tugendhat that you think it is. I mean, he's not... I do agree with you, because I've not seen the actual Times. I've only seen a bit of the Times interview, and it wasn't the bit where Tom Tugendhat was talking about the leadership race. But I did notice when in reading the write-ups of it, there was a lack of just a quote of him saying, I would like to be prime minister now.
Yeah.
It wasn't a direct challenge, I don't think. It wasn't a call for Boris Johnson to step down as such. But Tom Tugendhat is not a daft guy. He knows that when that sort of question is asked at a time like this, there is a context to it, right? So I don't think it's not an announcement of a leadership challenge, if you see what I mean.
He's a 16-1, they're saying outsider. His odds are 16-1 to become the next Tory prime minister. Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak persist in leading the pack.
These are betting odds, I'm guessing.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
I mean, I love having these conversations, because it's basically like playing... It's like figuring out what your top six Pokemon team is. Or like playing Top Trumps. It's a similar vibe, right?
It is a similar vibe, yeah.
Yeah. Something that was interesting that I've noticed over the past couple of days is Liz Truss is getting to talk about Ukraine a lot and travel and like fist bump people in NATO.
Yep.
That really happened, by the way. And Rishi Sunak is committing to increasing taxes on poor people. So, and oh, he's being photographed all the time with the Prime Minister, which is interesting. Do you think, I mean, I feel like Tom Tugendhat is a very long shot. Do you think that there's been very much shuffling? And people kind of like, people have been getting their campaigns in prepared?
Yeah, well, there was an independent report, as in a report in the independent newspaper, that was titled Rishi Sunak puts the finishing touches to his leadership bid or something like that. I mean, you'd be, given what's happened in the last couple of weeks regarding Boris Johnson, if anyone is interested in becoming, like, serious about being Prime Minister, they're obviously going to be sounding out people around their prospects for a leadership bid. So, and you can kind of read that in, you know, on Twitter, in any of the newspapers, really. There's reports of people sounding out people and people on manoeuvres. So, in that sense, I do believe that people are making preparations, basically, and I think Rishi Sunak's clearly one of them. As you say, Liz Truss has been on a bit of a media blitz regarding Ukraine, which is partly about the Ukrainian situation, but is also trying to tout her credentials for being Prime Minister. She keeps getting compared to Margaret Thatcher, doesn't she?
There's that photo of her in a tank.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is neither here nor there. I don't know. I think maybe because I only really, I obviously have no memory of Margaret Thatcher because I was about 6 months old when she left Prime Minister, the post of Prime Minister. But from what I've seen of her from like, I don't know why I have to explain this, from like YouTube and TV, she was actually a pretty good communicator. Liz Truss is an appalling, appalling communicator. In my opinion, anyway. Like, the classic is pork markets.
So this
where
is
she just basically gets possessed by, I don't know, the ghost of pigs in blanket past. I don't know.
Was this when she was trade minister or something? And
yes,
she was opening
correct. Pork
markets in China.
In China.
Yeah.
And we import over half of our cheese. That is a disgrace. Like it was like when you put a text into a text to speech kind of like robot, and it's not a very good robot. It's sometimes what happens when she speaks. And she was asked directly, I think, by Kay Burley at some point this week about, did you go to any parties? And she just froze. And just was unable to kind of like articulate anything other than it, like, it was just so obvious that she was like Trussbot.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Am I making up that she's a terrible communicator? Am I being unfair?
I mean, I think her I've seen a couple of interviews of her around the Ukrainian situation, and I think she was fine in that particular role. You know, when she's being asked what Britain plans on doing in relation to the Ukraine, I think she's been reasonably clear about that.
Mm-hmm. She's memorized stuff well.
Yeah, but in the past when she was in that trade, that speech in particular, I think, is just infamous. The trade secretary speech at the, I think it was at the Tory party conference or something like that. Mm-hmm. She was terrible at communication then. This sounds like a dumb question, but do you remember what does she stand for in the context of the Tory party? She's a free market
libertarian-y person. It's like her vibe.
And she
famously used to be a Lib Dem until I realised they were neither liberal nor democratic. She loves that joke.
I mean, the democratic thing is slightly fair.
Shut up.
You know, got to be honest about that. And she a while ago, she was talking about how in her defense of free market, she was talking about how young people are like, what was it, Uber ordering, Deliveroo eating, and just reeled off all these tech companies, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. all these like fast delivery type platforms.
Exploitative labor shit. I don't think she's just wrong. And maybe I am just being really unfair, but when she says it, I just don't think she really... I think she is just, like, saying buzzwords.
It did come off that way.
Mm.
So... And I don't... I mean, she's not been Foreign Secretary for that long, has she? She replaced...
No, she was Trade Secretary as well, after Rob ruined Afghanistan. Do you think that... The common wisdom is that it's going to be her and Sunak... would likely... I mean, we'd have to see if either of them fucked it up. they're seen as kind of like the two front runners. Do you think that's correct?
I mean, in a sense, these predictions are self-fulfilling prophecies, aren't they? Because if all the newspapers are reporting these two are the favourites and you're a Tory MP, you...
People thought that Boris Johnson was going to run in 2017.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's not...
Oh, 2016, sorry.
Just because you're the favourite doesn't mean you're going to win. Like, it just means that both these two are very likely people to run to be the next Prime Minister, but that doesn't really say anything about their prospects of getting it in the finish, I don't think.
Many people more informed and smarter than us have, I know, unimaginable, have suggested that the... Because Rishi Sunak is still, I think, the most popular politician in the UK. He's riding that wave off of Eat Out to Help Out.
That was a long time ago now. And I think it's generally been concluded that it wasn't a particularly great policy.
No, but people quite enjoyed having like some money off of their meal, didn't they, broadly? Yeah. And contracting COVID. So but his popularity is based off of an extraordinary policy decision that he would never make in ordinary times because he hates spending stuff. Like, he would never... he doesn't really want to stimulate the economy. He wants a balanced checkbook. You can see this with the it's income tax. No, it's national insurance.
National
rise.
Insurance, yeah.
Importantly, national insurance rise, because it doesn't just hit earners. Yeah, and also both him and Truss do come across as quite green, I think, in
as
a way
in
that
naive or environmentally friendly.
An important thing to clarify, the former rather than the latter. So I think they seem inexperienced, and yeah, they seem inexperienced. There is, a naivety to the way that they present themselves sometimes. I don't know.
Well, Rishi Sunak is inexperienced. I think Liz Truss, he says, trying to look up her Wikipedia page in the background, she's had quite a few roles in various governments in the last 10 years. She was Environmental and Food and Rural Affairs Secretary back in 2014 to 2016.
Mm.
And she was Under Secretary of State for Childcare Education.
She was also, I think still is, the Equalities Minister.
Yes.
Right? Which is definitely something that she has time to do now that Russia's about to plough into Ukraine.
Yeah, she's had quite long experience in government, to be fair to her. But I don't think she's impressed in any of the roles that she's been in. That sounds very harsh, but
but yet it's so popular. Apparently, she's very popular. She's very good one on one with like party members and stuff like that, and that's where her perceived popularity comes from, at the very least.
Well, I guess there's this core of like Tory backbench MPs who think that, you know, all this COVID-related spending has been very nice and maybe appropriate to the pandemic, but really want to get back to doing some proper Thatcherism once all this has blown over. And I think that is reflected in Sunak and Truss being the two lead candidates that have been marked out so far.
So I know that we've had a lovely conversation for the past 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But you don't think this is going to happen, do you?
There's a possibility that Boris Johnson will be sacked before the end of the year, or ousted before the end of the year, I should say.
Jimmy, take a leaf out of my book and make some wild predictions that you're going to regret later on. Come on, do it. I swear. Don't hedge your bets. Don't say it's certainly possible.
I would just say that most prime ministers who are in office, it's like, depends how you calculate this, but I once did a, actually at the start of when Boris Johnson was first chosen as, or when he won the general election 2019, I tried to look at historically when prime ministers have fought the next general election. So when they've been in office, they've had like another general elections coming up, you know, over the next 4 or 5 years.
You went away and looked at the data.
I did.
Wow.
And since like 1918, I did it too, because that's the first time you have proper mass participation, including women in British democracy. I think
how
it's
generous
about,
of you.
Or I might have done it from the end of World War II. But about 2/3 of the time, the sitting prime minister will fight the next general election. And I still, you know, despite every, I mean, I think Boris Johnson's in more trouble at this stage of his premiership than most prime ministers would be. So I think that does slightly offset things. But, you know, the last 2 weeks have been full of people, including yourself, saying, oh yeah, he's definitely done for. And he's still here.
I said he's running out of road and he won't last the week, I think about 2 weeks ago. So I didn't say which week. I just said he won't last the week.
That's true. That is true. And some week, you know, potentially several years down the line, Boris Johnson will be.
Where he will stop being Prime Minister. I will be proven correct.
But I mean, also he did win a big majority back in 2019. It would be unusual for a, if not unheard of, for a sitting prime minister with a majority like that to be ousted. And it's not obvious who would replace him, as we've kind of indicated with our discussion of Truss and Sunak. I don't think it is obvious who's up next. I mean, the theory that brought him into office was that he was a prime minister that you could unite the Tory party around Brexit and get Brexit done, as the slogan went. And he was a risky choice for uncertain times, and leaving the COVID pandemic and, you know, seeing some more conventional problems that governments are, you know, used to seeing, things like inflation, the situation in Ukraine and so on. Maybe a more conventional candidate would be more appropriate now. But
I have been thinking, Jimmy, about who I would want, assuming that they don't go straight to kind of like a general election. Who do I want to be in charge, at least until the next election? It's obviously not going to be somebody that I particularly like, because me and the Conservative Party, formerly cordial, currently on the rocks.
I mean, there's got to be quite a few Tory MPs, not necessarily very popular ones, among the Conservative Party that you would find quite tolerable, I think.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, I'm a great Ken Clark apologist, as an example. He's not there anymore, an example, one of my faves. Most of my favourite Tories left and joined Change UK, to be completely honest. And we know where that went. I'm going to put this out here. I kind of, like, you know what? In a time like this, I'd quite like Theresa back. And I think that it says a lot when you have nostalgia for Theresa fucking May.
I think it's just the default option. As soon as a prime minister leaves office, you give it like a year or two. And people look back and they think, once the day-to-day shenanigans have drifted out of your mind, and you just look at the overall arc, I think all prime ministers look better, to be honest. Apart from Tony Blair, who everyone hates now. But, you know, John
and
Major,
David,
Gordon
and David
Gordon
Cameron.
There's definitely been periods during the last couple of years of doing this podcast where you looked at me and said, where David Cameron was in charge.
I never phrase it like that. Thank you very much. My longing for the halcyon days of the coalition have nothing to do with David Cameron. It has to do with Liberal Democrats being in power.
Well, also being pre-Brexit as well.
Brexit.
Yeah, quite an important factor, I would say.
We talked about Ukraine a lot. This is me segueing, by the way, just to ruin, break the fourth wall.
That's okay.
How's it going over there? Apparently we've got 100,000 troops on the border.
No, Russia has 100,000 troops on the border.
Sorry, by we, I mean
They.
Russia. Oh my god, am I outing myself as a Russian sleeper agent?
Just to clarify, the British Army does not have 100,000 troops.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of the things...
Please don't use this as propaganda, Putin. Thank you.
So the British would, even if we were willing to deploy all of our forces... is it the British Army or is it the British Armed Forces in general that doesn't have 100,000 troops? Or personnel, I should say. We don't have a lot, you know, infamously the British Army has been shrinking year on year, and we now have very few troops, but we have a lot of good equipment, so swings and roundabouts. Mm-hmm.
And that's how we've been assisting, right? So I love this as a detail. The BBC journalist who reported on this said that apparently British passport holders have been in some bars around Kiev are being offered free drinks at bars. because the UK has been sending anti-tank artillery, and there's been loads of videos of Ukrainian troops and kind of like volunteers learning how to use them and stuff. So apparently, hey, we're popular somewhere.
Yeah, that is true, or at least that's what I've been hearing. I just googled in the background, there is 150,000 personnel in the British Armed Forces, but there are fewer than 100,000 in the British Army.
Oh my god, head to head, let's do it. Well, come at me, Putin.
The countries that are willing to respond to Russian aggression, we'll need to talk about the US attitude to this, but if you take them out of the picture, you've got Britain, France, Poland, the Baltic countries, mm-hmm. you know, are making preparations, you know, putting stuff on the, eastern border of NATO / the European Union. Combined, they don't have the power, even if they wanted to actually combat Russia. They're really just trying to give some sort of aid to Ukraine and bolster the defences in Poland and the Baltic states.
The UK and NATO, I haven't seen a spokesperson from the EU yet, so forgive me, have said that there is no chance of kind of like quote-unquote troops on the ground.
Yeah, Liz Truss has said it's unlikely that the British would deploy troops in Ukraine.
Yeah, and the same from NATO in general, which is obviously that's the key alliance. Ukraine is not a part of NATO, and so isn't bound by the clause of if you attack one of us, you attack all of us.
Yeah,
all for one for all.
Which is sort of a major part of the reason Vladimir Putin is considering invading Ukraine, is that he wants them to commit to never joining NATO in the future. Officially, talks for Ukraine to join NATO are ongoing. Like the
kind of like Turkey joining the EU, though.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. But like the Ukraine has not been officially told no, so the application is still being considered in a way. But generally,
we also have separate memorandums of understanding. There's a memorandum of understanding that the UK, US, Ukraine, and Russia. I don't know if there were any other signatories signed to protect that recognizes Ukraine's sovereignty and borders at the time of kind of like it was the early 90s, which included Crimea being part of Ukraine.
Yeah, it was after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Yeah.
Yeah. And because it's there's so much like legal bullshit, but because it's a memorandum of understanding, Russia have just gone, sorry, we don't understand it anymore. And so that's why Ukraine happened. But there is an argument that Ukraine is protected by guarantees from the UK and the US, even though we've actively said that we wouldn't do anything.
Well, I think the that particular memorandum you're talking about was connected to Ukraine giving up its nuclear arsenal, which it held
because, for protection.
Yeah, it held because... The arsenal was there when the Soviet Union collapsed, so it was inherited it from the Soviet Union, but was, I guess, kind of famously
nuclear nation, Ukraine.
Yeah, exactly. So they gave up their their nuclear weapons, and to compensate them, Russia basically said that they would respect Ukraine's territorial integrity, and you know the rest is history. Lol. So the argument is really about Putin would like Ukraine to be within Russia's sphere of influence. NATO, I mean, the Americans have been trying to pivot towards Asia for various reasons, you know, since Barack Obama was in office. And so they would like...
China, that's the reason. The reason is China.
In short. And they would like Europe to actually shoulder the more of our defence burden, basically. But Europe is not particularly willing to do that because it's expensive and, you know, they've got better things to do. Which is, you know, and it, you know, as part of the policy that flows downstream from that is Germany's unwillingness to actually back up Ukraine in any real substantial sense. But also the fact that Germany is increasingly reliant on Russian gas for its energy needs.
Which is a problem that we don't have, right? We buy everything from Norway.
I mean, France has nuclear power stations, so it's not reliant on Russian energy in the same way. The UK is definitely less reliant than Germany is. So we do have... And the US has been telling Germany not to actually... that, you know, the Nord Stream pipelines... the US has been keen for Germany not to be reliant on the gas that comes through those pipelines for reasons like this, because it allows Russia to effectively blackmail Germany into supporting its foreign policy objectives, or at least abstaining and not doing anything that would actually hinder Russian foreign policy. So it's all kind of a clusterfuck in summary. And it looks very... I mean, it's not certain that, that Vladimir Putin will invade Ukraine. And there's the propaganda blitz that Russia saw before the invasion of Crimea has apparently not occurred this time round, which some people have interpreted.
What do you mean by propaganda blitz?
As in, there was lots of propaganda
internally within Russia.
Yeah, within Russia on Russia TV to actually kind of legitimize the Crimean invasion. And I was reading, I can't remember where, but that hasn't occurred to the same extent this time round. But a lot of the other signs point, I mean, as you say, 100,000 troops massed on the border. There's that exercise between Belarus and Russia that I mentioned earlier, which could be a pretext for an invasion. And, you know, what's the various statements that Vladimir Putin has said, the fact that he's made a lot of demands about Ukraine's relationship to NATO that he knows that NATO won't agree to. And people interpret that as, you know, him making unreasonable demands so that he's got, you know, cause to go to war when those demands are not met, even though they're unreasonable. So it's very possible in the next couple of weeks that he'll invade Ukraine. And the main objective is to prevent the Ukraine from ever joining NATO and also to guarantee more.
Well, can't join NATO if Ukraine doesn't exist anymore.
Well, they're not going to annex Ukraine. That's not going to happen. No.
Yeah, it is unlikely to happen, because also there's a majority of Ukrainians don't want to be part of Russia.
Yeah, but what...
That was not necessarily the same in Ukraine, in Crimea specifically.
Well, it's kind of ambiguous in Crimea, because they did have that referendum, which was, you know, any referendum that Russia's involved with is very suspect. But there was evidence that there were a lot of people living in Crimea who did actually feel more affiliation with Russia than Ukraine.
Who identify as Russian as well, I believe.
That is somewhat true of people living in the east of Ukraine, but it's less true. I mean, it's less inclined that way. But what a lot of people think that Putin wants to achieve with an invasion of Russia is to actually get more autonomy for eastern Ukraine, which will undermine Ukraine's ability to actually be separate from Russia. So it's a way of bringing Ukraine more firmly under Russian influence and control, ultimately.
Would it be kind of like Iceland saying, advocating for a Scottish government? Yeah? Great. I love that my metaphor works. Or similarly works. I think that that's it. Yeah, really strong analogy there, Jazza. Good job.
I mean, the analogy people have made quite a lot on Twitter, I've noticed, and this is against Putin's justifications, it's the idea of, like, you know, Putin keeps saying, oh, you know, there's a lot of Russian speaking people in the east of Ukraine and we need to, like, protect those people because you know, from the Ukrainian government. But it's kind of similar to, you know, somebody saying, oh, it's legitimate for Britain to invade Ireland because there's so many English speakers in Ireland. Yeah, that it's the...
sorry everybody, Jimmy doesn't, it's not very sensitive, is he? Well, let's not drag that up.
The point of the analogy is that just because people speak a given language, that doesn't mean that's where their identity lies. I feel like you didn't follow my analogy at all, Jazza.
I just panicked.
Fair enough. you seem a bit about this whole situation.
It's very far away. no, that is unfair. It feels very out of
our control.
It feels very out of our control. Yeah,
it does.
And I guess that's why I think I'm deliberately disassociating, so that I'm able to sleep at night. I'd probably be more concerned about this than like Partygate. And actually, and you know what? When people are like, guys, why are we talking about the Prime Minister being ambushed by a cake? And like, there's literally troops on Ukraine's borders. I'm like, shut up. I do want to find out about the cake, but also you have a fair point. I think objectively, Russia preparing to invade Ukraine is a bigger problem in the grand scheme of things. But it feels, especially because we know that the UK is, our response is probably going to be sanctions beyond anything else, like removing access to kind of like financial systems for Russia, making sure that that is unilaterally done across kind of like non-NATO, like NATO, but also non-NATO states as well, as much as possible. Like, but I don't get to decide that.
Yeah.
I also don't get to decide whether or not the Prime Minister was ambushed by a cake. That's Sue. That's all Sue. how do you feel?
I mean, it seems like, the last 5 years has had a lot of serious seeming news stories, but this seems like a much bigger deal than, and it's not a bigger deal than COVID, but it seems like a bigger deal than Brexit, to be honest with you. The idea that Russia could invade Ukraine, and just nobody. I mean, I think it's very undermining for any kind of European claim at strategic military autonomy. It's probably a good thing for NATO in the sense that it's encouraged Britain to militarily engage with Eastern Europe in a as serious a way as we can, given our military resources. The same, I think, can be said of France as well. It's made NATO feel more relevant. And I think it was last year that Emmanuel Macron was attacking NATO as being brain dead, I think was the phrase he used. It's also forced the Americans to re-engage with Europe again, which is probably not great for them in the sense it will divert resources in some ways from them thinking about China. But it does mean that they, under Trump, he famously was basically calling out the European members of NATO and saying they're not really paying their fair share, which is true. It is something fair that he said.
And that's because there is a commitment within NATO to spend X amount.
2% of your GDP on defence, yeah.
Yeah, and we do it.
We do. I think Greece does it as well, oddly enough.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got a negative GDP, Jimmy, it's apparently easy.
It's quite easy.
And France doesn't either. Like, France doesn't hit that, which I always find surprising, because they're seen as kind of like the other European military might alongside us.
Yeah, they have nuclear weapons, so and they do spend a fair amount, and they do have a fair amount of foreign entanglements going on. So, yeah, I mean, cynically, I think this crisis has in some ways been a good thing for Britain, and a good good way of Britain to actually project that it is still a serious
good thing for Liz Truss.
Player, yeah, good thing for Liz Truss as well. Which will be helpful when she mounts her leadership bid in the coming weeks or months.
Jimmy, name a Neil Young song.
Southern Man.
Nope. Any others?
Old Man. Old Man, Take a Look at My Life. I'm a Lot Like You.
I just don't think I'm the demographic, Jimmy. I don't think this is going to happen.
Hey, Hey, My, My.
Blank. You could be speaking Greek to me and it would be nothing.
You know, like Kurt Cobain's suicide note, he quoted the line, it's better to burn out than to fade away.
Oh.
That's a Neil Young lyric.
Okay.
From, well, Hey Hey My My.
We've found a thread of relatability.
We have. But it's fair to say you're not a Neil Young fan.
Uh-huh. No. Not, I don't actively dislike, I am just unaware. Yeah. But Neil Young fought the tech giant, and the tech giant won.
I think that's a Clash song. I don't think that's a Neil Young song.
Obviously, I know that. I'm not. I've just said I don't know any Neil Young songs. How could I be quoting? I just thought it was a nice musical reference.
Yeah. I guess we can treat it that way.
Mm-hmm. So Joe Rogan.
Yes,
he really is a little bit of an idiot. But he has the most popular podcast on the internet. Just beating us.
By a factor of, you know, several zeros.
Just beating us. He's had an exclusivity deal with Spotify for the past 2 years of $100 million a year.
He gets paid $100 million a year. Is that the deal?
I don't think it's he gets paid, but the Joe Rogan Experience podcast incorporated. That's the exclusivity deal. I don't think it's like a Joe Rogan wage, is it?
I don't think that's how exclusivities
work,
to be honest with you.
Spotify rolled big on that because Joe Rogan used to be multi-platform and now it's exclusively on Spotify.
True.
And it's also been going for a really long time. I didn't realize he started in 2009. He's famous for being like a UFC commentator.
Yep.
And so it's loads of like them. Do you know what I mean? Like the people who are really into NFTs at the moment, like that corner of the internet, like young impressionable people.
So I think he specializes, even though he only really comes to infamy over his conspiracy theorist guests.
Mm.
I'd say that, you know, he has a lot of stand-up comedians on because he's a stand-up comic. He has a lot of people who are involved in mixed martial arts.
Is he funny?
I enjoyed his last special when it appeared on Netflix.
He's not
the best stand-up comedian, I don't think. I think there's very few people who would.
No Lonnie Love.
He's no Bill Burr. I would put it that way. But he's in the same he's in the same broad bracket as Bill Burr in terms of the type of humour and the target audience.
Mm. Excellent.
You're not a stand-up comedy fan.
My Jess. People.
And he does advertise. He used to advertise a lot of brain supplements on his podcast, or like
he's big brain energy.
Yeah, among other things. It's a weird mixture, but it clearly has worked for him. It's very popular.
And he's doing very well. Sure, good. I'm so happy for him. Neil Young decided, because of a recent guest, and I guess several recent guests that have been on the Joe Rogan podcast, who are described variously as kind of like vaccine hesitant or anti-vax in general.
Yeah.
One of the most recent high profile ones was Robert Malone, who is in this weird world. He was on like a couple of weeks ago. And he was one of the, he contributed to the research that ended up resulting in the mRNA vaccines that form like Pfizer and Moderna and the new technology of vaccines. And because he didn't get enough attention and credit for saving the world, it looks like he's just kind of, I don't know, he's just lending his voice to a lot of these vaccine hesitant and anti-vax places. By suggesting stuff like that the vaccine can make things worse. He's saying that people under 18 shouldn't take the vaccine, which is a really consequential thing to say to an audience like Joe Rogan's, which is really, really popular with young men.
I just thought most of his audience were over 18, to be fair.
But he's very, very, like, most teenage boys know who Joe Rogan is.
That's probably
and we'll
true.
Listen to the podcast, and we'll listen to the podcast and we'll be influenced by it. Like, he's he's teen boy culture.
He is teen boy culture. I think that probably is true.
But this guy, Robert Malone, is not the only kind of like vaccine hesitant. Why do I keep on qualifying that?
What do you mean?
he's had the vaccine, because so he's not anti-vax, but this vaccine hesitant guy who helped make the RNA, the mRNA vaccine, is high profile enough to kind of like it brought it to the top of the mind of, I suppose, Neil Young. And Neil Young then said, I can't find the actual quote, but like, Spotify is complicit in people who are eventually going to die because they don't get the vaccine.
Yeah, because they've been influenced by the claims made on Joe Rogan's podcast.
That is, even with Omicron, and I can't believe that I feel like I have to say this, but I do feel like I have to say this, like, most of the people who are in hospital at the moment and most of the people who are dying are people who have chosen not to get the vaccine, or who aren't vaccinated.
Funnily enough, this is a bit of a tangent, but I grew up in Sutton in kind of southwest London, and I was popping back to see my mum today, and in the little like sort of almost quasi-villagey place where I grew up, there was an anti-vaccine protest, like mostly composed of middle class people, but also including 1 6-foot-2 guy who was bald, wearing army like camo trousers and like army boots. And they had signs saying various things, one of which was like, honk your horn if you're pro-freedom or something like that. And a lot of the people, a lot of the very middle-class people driving through were honking their horn. And it was slightly surreal, to be honest, to see that in, you know, what's quite a nice neighbourhood in southwest London.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's bemusing.
Case in point, why this shit is important. Yeah. And Neil Young made Spotify make the decision, either you get this misinformation off of your platform, or I pull my stuff. And I think, understandably, I think I've shown how popular Neil Young's music is.
He's very popular. He's one of the biggest rock musicians of all time.
They chose to keep Joe Rogan. After the fact, Neil Young then... offered 3 months of free Amazon Music subscriptions, so you can now find him on Amazon Music.
What, he's paying for these subscriptions, are they?
No, Amazon have seen it as kind of like a promotional deal, haven't they?
Oh, I see. And given, gotcha.
Yeah. But then there's been someone called Joni something has also done it. Like
Joni Mitchell, also a very famous musical artist.
The only people who seem to have kind of like stood up and actively done something and made Spotify choose seem to be people who have already made all of their money and don't really need to worry about the revenue that they're getting from Spotify, to be completely honest.
It's not much of a concession for Neil Young to make, and he's also previously been very unhappy with the quality of the audio files that Spotify puts out, because he considers them too lo-fi.
Okay,
so
great.
There's other stuff going on here.
Yeah, sure. Meghan and Harry have said they're not too happy about it, but they've still done nothing. They have a $25 million dollar deal with Spotify.
They've
the
posted
way, podcast.
One podcast as a result
you,
of that.
Are you joking?
Do you not know about this?
I didn't know that there was only one podcast. Are you joking?
Yeah, they've released one episode.
How long ago did they release an episode?
Like end of 2020?
No.
Like a very long time ago. Listeners, if you think our recording schedule is bad, like we are better than the Sussexes. I just want to put that out there.
They got paid $25 million to upload an episode.
It's a real... I mean, I've listened to it, and frankly, it's very disappointing. $25 million does not buy you a lot.
Is it the two of them?
It's the two of them. They also had Elton John made an appearance. Some other worthy celebrities made an appearance. Mm-hmm. Archie, the baby, is also heard at some point during the podcast.
Wow, what a ride.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are implications for this? Possibly, are we going to see more boycotts, do you think? Is this possible?
It is, but I mean, there's been rumours that people like Taylor Swift or Foo Fighters might boycott the platform. I think I'm right in saying Taylor Swift previously did leave Spotify, but came back.
Yeah, she did leave Spotify.
But that was over finances, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was trying to get a better deal for artists, and I don't know if that happened, but yeah. She was happy enough.
Yeah, she did.
Happy enough to release Taylor's version of everything.
I mean, I agree with the criticisms that have been levelled against Joe Rogan and mm-hmm. having these cranky guests on, but I also think that in a free kind of media environment, he's allowed to do that, and Spotify is allowed to host him. And I personally would not support a boycott of Spotify for hosting the Joe Rogan podcast.
You just want people to complain about things and then get on with their lives. You hate people like making any hard decisions about like the consumerism that they partake in. I broadly agree with you about people are allowed to say stupid and harmful shit. I broadly agree with that. I think it is different allowing for that stuff to be on your platform and it being monetized to having an exclusivity contract of such a gargantuan amount of money. And I think that is...
Well, so Spotify is more in bed with Joe Rogan's podcast than with our podcast, for instance, or any
You can listen to us on Google Podcasts.
Yeah.
I think you can still listen to us on Acast, even though we have nothing to do with them.
Jazz is not bitter about that lack of relationship, either.
No, but we have a relationship, apparently, because we're on Acast. Anyway, that's behind the scenes shit that you don't need to hear about.
That's true, but I think it for Neil Young to say, you know, I'm gonna leave unless you take down Joe Rogan's podcast from your platform. It's a bit like. Yeah, that it's trying to pressure a company into effectively censoring Joe Rogan's podcast. It's not government censorship, but it's trying to will a corporation to censor somebody. I don't think that's good. I'm pretty much in favor of platforms being sort of net neutral, mm-hmm. to use an old term,
resulting in many people's death. Yeah, sure. So
well, you can't have any sort of political debate if you've got this you know, largely self-selected class of people that say, oh no, you can't say that because it's dangerous, like because somebody might be persuaded by your argument.
Where there is likely to be I don't think it's the artists. The artists are going to get the headlines, but any movement in this that happens is going to come from the advertisers. So if advertisers start to pull out from Spotify because of this, then there will be shifts, because that's where their revenue comes from. They can give or take Neil Young. Like, I'm sure Neil Young is an incredibly influential, important artist. I get that. Still don't know anything that he's done. But they don't care about one artist. Like, Spotify survived for a really long time without the Beatles, and like, they were fine. I mean,
it's going to be
the advertisers rather than the artists or the users, right?
I've just googled this in the background. Spotify makes most of its money from its premium subscriptions rather than advertising. I mean, you could have pressure either way. You could have advertisers pulling out, or you could have consumers deciding to not to use the platform anymore and cancelling the subscriptions.
I should have looked this up. Are they publicly traded? I think, are they? They are, aren't they?
Google.
This is the Google song.
It looks like it's traded on the New York Stock Exchange.
Cool.
Apparently.
That would be important too.
We'll see.
I don't think individual artists are going to have the clout that they need unless like literally all of the Billboard Top 100 left, and that's not going to happen.
Would you be in favour of Joe Rogan being removed from Spotify?
kind of like Ukraine, it is not my decision.
Yeah, but would you, are you personally in favour of it?
I don't think that they should be offering that much. I don't think that money, that kind of content should be advertised.
Yeah,
it should earn money. It should be monetized.
It should be demonetized.
Yeah, that's what YouTube does.
Yeah.
And I think that qualms personally, definitely not representing my employer. but personally, that strikes kind of like the balance that I'm sometimes uneasy of when it comes to removing content. Mm. I think that freedom of speech needs to exist, but there's no broadly, there is no human right of monetizing that speech. Or that speech being seen or heard by everybody.
Yeah,
and I think those are, that's kind of like, I think that's the middle bit that I sit in anyway.
I mean,
Joe Rogan problem is just how much money he makes from it.
Is it the money? So I feel that the problem people have with it is not the fact he's making money off of it. It's the fact that he is providing a platform for these people to broadcast their message to a large audience. So I think that's the issue.
That is how lots
have.
Of people are. Yeah, I think that is inevitably how a lot of people view it. But he's always done this. He's always had these people on that podcast. Spotify knew what they were getting into bed with, and they gave him full editorial control. Which is part of their deal. They knew exactly what they were doing. I wouldn't have signed that deal if I was Spotify.
I think it was, I mean, at the time it was felt to be risky because all of these problems were mentioned.
Surprise.
I think also there was a some staff, I have a feeling it was to do with Joe Rogan's sort of slightly more trans exclusionary attitudes that he's broadcast.
Yes, I have seen that.
Yes,
stuff as well,
staff tried to protest against his inclusion on, you know, against the deal with Spotify, basically, and the Spotify management just told them to get lost, basically. Which, you know, I kind of approve of, just because I, you know, as I said, I think that trying to censor people, trying to say to certain people you're not allowed to, you know, spread your ideas, I'm generally quite skeptical about, although we could argue at the margins of that.
I still pay for Spotify subscription. I still have Spotify Premium.
Are you considering cancelling your subscription as a result of this?
I should, really, shouldn't I?
I don't know, should you?
But then Mum and Dad are going to be really angry with me because we've got a load of like family playlists.
Couldn't you switch over to YouTube Music or something like that?
I think I'm in too deep.
Is this another rock reference that you've crowbarred into the podcast?
It wasn't deliberately. Have I made one?
Sum 41? No?
Oh, yeah, and they're trying to keep... See, if Sum 41 had boycotted Spotify, I'd care.
I'm sorry for making you talk about a music artist that you don't care about at all.
No, it's okay. I think this is a really interesting conversation. Well done.
Well done. Good stuff.
Shall we bring it to a close?
We probably should bring this conversation to a close, Jazza. Where can they find you on the interwebs?
Jazza John on all social media sites. Also, like, leave us a review on Spotify if you're listening to us on Spotify. Hi. Please don't boycott us. But you'll get an alert that asks you to rate this podcast. You can rate podcasts on Spotify really easily now. Please do that, because that really, really helps us out. As well as giving us all of your money on Patreon.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a $100 million deal. Despite being just behind Joe Rogan.
Too many.
And well ahead of the Sussexes in terms of output.
Very much so, yeah. Where the
that's
episode...
so funny. I didn't know that. That's so funny. Oh.
It is bad content, you know. It's exactly the sort of meaningless dribble that you'd expect them to be putting out.
Careful, we're in a very glass house.
At least we're objectionable occasionally, you know. It's got to count for something.
Yeah. Where can they find you, Jimmy? What are you doing?
They can find me on Twitter at JDE Nichols.
Remember when he quit Twitter, guys? Yeah, just want to... Yeah.
I've re-embraced Twitter because, you know, I need to...
Are you on Wordle?
Is one on Wordle? I have played Wordle, like, once or twice.
But you're not... It's literally about 30% of my feed at any given moment, and I hate it so much.
You need to mute Wordle in your Twitter settings.
I just had a thunderbolt of realization. You mean I have autonomy of what my feed might look like?
I mean, I mute loads of things, you know. You, Tom Howard.
Yeah, fuck you.
Got to curate your experience on Twitter.
Yeah, 100%. Lovely. All right. See you, everyone. Bye-bye. Toodaloo. Bye-bye.